HD 88.9 Mount Kisco, WANZ HD 90.1 Stanford, WANR 88.5 Brewster, and WAMC AM 1400 Albany.
Good morning. Welcome to the third hour of the Roundtable. I'm Joe Donahue. The new movie Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President, showcases the role that music played in propelling Jimmy Carter from Georgia to the White House and how his love for music gave him an unexpected edge in the presidential race. We'll meet the filmmakers right after the news. With the theme of Safe, Smart, Ready, SUNY Adirondack will begin its fall semester on Tuesday, September 9th, offering classes both remotely and in person. We'll talk to the SUNY Adirondack president, Dr. Christine Duffy. Plus, we'll also learn about the Saratoga Senior Center as part of our Falling Into Place series. First, news.
Hello, this is Nick Kelly with the BBC News. China and India have accused each other of military provocation on their disputed Himalayan border, where thousands of troops have been deployed following recent tensions. The Chinese military said Indian soldiers across the border on Monday near Lake Pangong in the Ladakh region. Earlier, Delhi said Chinese soldiers had carried out provocative military movements to change the status quo. Ambrasan Itirajan has the details.
The Chinese military statement was blunt. It accused India of seriously violating China's territorial sovereignty and demanded that Delhi withdraw its troops from the Chinese side of the line of actual control in Ladakh. Earlier, Delhi said Indian soldiers had preempted what it called a Chinese attempt to unilaterally change facts on the ground. Tensions have escalated since June when troops from the two sides fought hand-to-hand combat in Ladakh, in which 20 Indian soldiers were killed. Beijing acknowledged casualties but did not provide any figures.
Australia says that one of its citizens, who is also a prominent news presenter on Chinese state television, has been detained without charge in China. Celia Hatton reports.
Cheng Lei was a model news presenter for Chinese state television, fronting Beijing's viewpoints on the English language network, CGTN, for almost 8 years, including some of the network's most politically sensitive coverage. The Australian Foreign Ministry says Canberra received notice that Ms. Lei was in detention on August 14th and was able to communicate with her via video link only on the 27th. Cheng Lei is now reportedly under residential detention, where she can be held for up to 6 months, although Beijing has yet to confirm her status.
Sudan has signed a peace deal with an alliance of rebel groups aimed at ending 17 years of conflict in the western region of Darfur and southern states. Two key rebel groups refused to sign the deal, which covers issues such as land ownership, power sharing, and the return home of the millions displaced by the fighting. The first ever commercial flight from Israel to the United Arab Emirates has landed in Abu Dhabi. The two countries agreed a peace deal earlier this month. The Palestinian Authority has condemned the move as a betrayal of their cause. But President Trump's adviser, Jared Kushner, who was on board with a US delegation, said the Palestinians had an opportunity to change their future.
The message that we carry for the Palestinians is also one of hope. We've done a lot of great work to lay out a pathway for them to improve their future. We've put an offer to their leadership on the table that will enable them to have a state and self-determination and an economic plan that could revitalize their economy. But we can't want peace more than they want peace.
Jared Kushner talking there. This is the World News from the BBC. A former intelligence chief in South Korea has been found guilty of embezzling more than $13 million worth of state funds to orchestrate a clandestine campaign to sway an election in 2012. Won Seo-hoon had already been found guilty of interfering in domestic politics to assist conservative lawmakers. President Michel Aoun has named Lebanon's ambassador to Germany, Mustafa Adib, as the next prime minister. The 48-year-old received the backing of former prime ministers, as well as the most powerful group in parliament, Hezbollah. Karine Torby in Beirut has more details.
The designation of Mustafa Adib, an unknown figure to most Lebanese, came just hours ahead of the second visit to Beirut in less than a month by the French president, Emmanuel Macron. The new prime minister, a job reserved for a Sunni Muslim, was picked by Sunni leaders and approved by the main Shia and Christian parties. But consensus over his nomination does not necessarily mean Lebanon's traditional leaders will put aside their political rivalries to support the reforms needed in Lebanon to ease its crises and unlock international aid.
The man who inspired an award-winning film on the Rwandan genocide has been paraded in the capital, Kigali, after being seized abroad. Paul Rusesabagina is accused of being a leader of terror groups and staging attacks on Rwanda. The authorities say the former hotel manager was wrongly portrayed in the film Hotel Rwanda as saving the lives of hundreds of people during the genocide. And the Polish statesman Lech Wałęsa has warned against the rise of populism, saying it may have diagnosed today's problems correctly, but that its remedies are wrong. Mr. Wałęsa said people needed to take the initiative from demagogues and replace their solutions with wiser ones. He didn't mention by name Poland's right-wing government, which has been criticised for undermining liberal democracy and the rule of law. BBC News.
Support comes from the Nature Conservancy's Adirondack chapter, working to preserve freshwater resources that flow from the Adirondacks to New York's urban centers. nature.org/Adirondacks. And from Bergeron Electrical Services, for over 30 years. Providing the Pioneer Valley and Western Massachusetts with all electrical services, interior and exterior lighting, generator installation, and more, bergeronelectrical.net.
This is WAMC News. I'm Ray Graff. Just 1 week ago, the fall semester began at SUNY Oneonta. Now the campus has been shut down for in-person activities for 2 weeks as authorities try to control the spread of COVID-19. We'll get an update from WAMC's Ian Pickus.
Governor Andrew Cuomo and SUNY Chancellor Jim Molotris made the move Sunday after 105 students tested positive for COVID-19. Officials say off-campus parties appear to be the culprit. Molotris says students who violate safety rules face discipline. Oneonta Mayor Gary Herzig.
This is not where we wanted to be, of course, but it has been not a time for alarm, but it's certainly a time for a wake-up call. You know, we all read the stories about in other parts of the country how parties will lead to widespread contamination quickly. All of us, young and old, sometimes think, well, that doesn't happen all the time. That may not happen here. Well, we've all learned a lesson.
Herzig says free community COVID testing will be available for all residents starting Wednesday. Ian Pickus, WAMC News.
With flu season around the corner, the New York State Department of Health will release guidelines today requiring all deaths involving respiratory illness to be tested for COVID-19 and the flu. State Health Commissioner Dr. Howard Zucker made the announcement Sunday.
This will maintain the integrity of our data. It will remove any reporting of presumed cases. This is very important information to have. I want to add that I urge everyone to get their flu shot unless there's a medical reason not to do so.
Public health officials in Vermont are considering making flu shots mandatory as a way to ease the burden of influenza amid the coronavirus pandemic. The New York State Department of Environmental Conservation is seeking public comments on a proposed recreation and management plan for a forest preserve in the Catskills. WAMC's Allison Dunn has more.
Public input is for the Shandaken Wild Forest, six parcels totaling 6,032 acres in the town of Shandaken in Ulster County and the town of Lexington in Greene County. DEC Commissioner Basil Sago says proposed revisions include expanding the trail system and offering biking, cross-country skiing, and hiking. The original management plan for the Shandaken Wild Forest was completed in 2005. Since, DEC has acquired 1,200 acres on the eastern slopes of Bel Air Mountain, 610 acres of which were added to the Shandaken Wild Forest. Public comment will be accepted through September 28th. I'm Allison Dunn, WAMC News.
At least four people are facing charges after protests during the painting of a Black Lives Matter mural on a street in the town of Bennington, Vermont. The Bennington Banner reports a number of protesters stood in the way during the three-hour painting of the mural on Sunday. About 250 people attended the event. Bennington Police Chief Paul Doucette said police would be issuing a release about the arrests. And the Atlantic herring fishery off New England will be slowed down considerably in September in an attempt to protect the fish's population. The National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration says the inshore Gulf of Maine's fishery for herring will be effectively shut down until September 30th. The agency says it is being shuttered for the month because fishermen are approaching a quota limit. The shutdown began August 23rd. On Wall Street, the Dow down 170 at 28,483, NASDAQ up 76 at 11,772. Mostly sunny today in the 70s. Increasing cloudiness tonight. A shower possible by morning. Overnight lows in the 50s. Partly sunny. Scattered showers tomorrow at highs in the 70s. At last report, fair 65 in Colchester, Vermont. 66 in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. 69 in Verona, New York. Fair and 68 in Albany. More WAMC News at noon with Jim Lavoulis and Midday Magazine.
Support comes from JSA Sustainable Wealth Management, Rhinebeck, offering investment options with a focus on environmental and social responsibility. JSAfinancial.com for information. And from Wild Birds Unlimited Nature Shop, Saratoga Springs, New York, providing bird feeding hobby products and unique nature gifts with an emphasis on U.S. and small business-made products. WBU.com/Saratoga Springs.
Alaska is getting wetter. I'm Randy Simon, and this is Earthwise, a look at our changing environment. Siberia has been in the news for record-setting heat waves and wildfires, but it is not the only northern region experiencing unusual weather. Alaska, apart from setting its own warm weather records, is experiencing the rainiest 5 years in its century-long meteorological record. Extreme weather in the Arctic is being driven.
Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. I'm not sleepy, and there is no place I'm going to. Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, play a song for me. In the jingle jangle morning, I'll come following you.
The new documentary, Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President, showcases the role the music played in propelling Jimmy Carter from Georgia to the White House and how his love for music gave him an unexpected edge in the presidential race. Willie Nelson, Bono, Bob Dylan, Garth Brooks, Trisha Yearwood, Jimmy Buffett, Roseanne Cash, Paul Simon, Andrew Young, and Madeleine Albright are just a few of the contributors giving interviews in the documentary. Rare archival footage from live performances by Buffett and Nelson are also included in the documentary. There will be three screenings of these of this film for this upcoming Labor Day weekend, Thursday and Saturday at the Berkshire Drive-In at Shakespeare and Company campus, and on Sunday at the Mahawi Drive-In at Simon's Rock. Once again, the name of the film is Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President. We welcome Mary Wharton, who is the director of the film, and Chris Farrell, who produced it. And it's a great pleasure to have you both on the program. Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
First of all, I want to my headphones were screwed up, and I think I said Bono instead of Bono, and I apologize.
We won't tell.
No, don't tell anybody. I feel like an idiot. But anyway, good morning. I have to tell you, I watched this film over the weekend. Goodness gracious, what a beautiful piece of work. Congratulations to you. Mary, let us begin with you. How did you come to this idea or come to this project of working on a film about Jimmy Carter and his association with music?
Well, I really have to sort of turn it over to Chris because he is the one who first discovered this story and came to me with it. And I'll let I'll let Chris tell you exactly how he came upon this cool story.
All right, Chris, we go to you.
So, Joe, thank you. So, Joe, Mary and I have been friends for 20 years, and over the last 5 years, we have been looking for projects to work together on. And I had been, independently of that, working on an Allman Brothers documentary, or at least trying to work on an Allman Brothers documentary, raising financing and doing research. And so I came across these gentlemen who had worked in the Carter administration, in the Carter White House, and said, look, we know a lot about Jimmy Carter and the Allman Brothers, and there's a great story to be told there. Come see us. So I went to Atlanta to see them, and lo and behold, they did have these fascinating stories about how the Allman Brothers helped with Carter in the White House and the very special relationship he had with Greg Allman in particular. And so I dutifully got up and said, thank you. I appreciate that insight and, you know, very helpful. And they said, well, wait a second. Don't you want to hear about Jimmy Carter and Bob Dylan? And I said, well, of course I do. That'd be fantastic. And I sat down and listened to that for a little bit. And again, made my way to leave and thank them. And they said, but wait, what about Jimmy Carter and Willie Nelson? I said, come on, guys, you got to stop. This is so I knew within moments of sort of leaving that office that I wanted to change gears, switch gears, that this was an interesting story, that there was something there to be explored. And I called Mary, you know, almost immediately. And I said, Mary, I have a project for us.
When it comes to bringing, I mean, what makes this so wonderful is that all the main players here are included. So you get Jimmy Carter. You talk to Jimmy Carter about this. You talk to Bob Dylan. You talk to Greg Allman and many, many others. So, I mean, that must have been really key, Mary, I would think, to making this whole thing come together.
Absolutely. I mean, that's, you know, one of the things going in that we kind of knew was going to be a challenge. And, you know, we also knew that it would be not impossible to tell without, you know, hearing from all these people, but certainly a lot less interesting. You know, we could certainly have found a writer who had done his research, a historian, say, who could speak to all of these stories. But obviously that's what makes documentary film the most compelling, is when it's not just kind of the voice of God narrator or, you know, some sort of, you know, expert witness, but actually hearing the stories from the people themselves. And so one of the things that was so great about this project for me was, number one, you know, working with Chris for the first time. We're, as he mentioned, we're old friends, and we had wanted to do something together. But there was another person that, as soon as we started working on this, that I knew would be a very key creative person to bring into the project, which was the writer Bill Flanagan. And one of his past lives, I guess you would say, was he was an editor of Musician Magazine for many years. He's a very widely respected music writer, and he has fantastic relationships with a lot of the artists in the film. He wrote a pretty significant book about U2 many years ago, and has, you know, maintained a great friendship with Bono. So it was Bill Flanagan that brought Bono and Bob Dylan and Paul Simon and Jimmy Buffett and Roseanne Cash to the film. And so he and I had a relationship. We used to work together 20 years ago, but we hadn't worked together in a long time. But I said to Chris, I think we need to bring Bill to this project if he'll do it, if we're lucky enough to get him. And when we had lunch with him and told him about it, he was on board from the beginning. He recognized what a great an interesting film this could be. And we had just an incredible creative team throughout the whole process, where everyone was so committed to it. You know, we have a fantastic editor, Mari Kiko Gonzalez, and a brilliant cinematographer, James Fideler, and just really everyone across the board that came on to this project was so committed to it. And you know, filmmaking is a team sport, and we were lucky to have a fantastic team.
Chris, I'm interested in what it's like when you make a pitch to the 39th president of the United States and say, this is what we're doing, of how he responded to it, of what the response was to the idea that you all had.
Well, there's a gentleman at the Carter Center who almost it's his responsibility to sort of be the gatekeeper.
Yeah.
And when we were making this pitch, we were told that they receive a proposal a week on a documentary or a story about Carter. And that was pretty daunting to think that, okay, you know, who are we to, you know, make it past this gatekeeper? But I would say with a little bit of perseverance and charm and just also, you know, letting them know that we wanted to tell this fun story. And, you know, this wasn't as Mary has said before, you know, we're not political scientists. We're not historians. We weren't trying to, you know, make the definitive Jimmy Carter documentary. We're trying to tell this surprising and fun story, but also convey certain messages about music and the power of music and just what music meant to, you know, to President Carter. So I certainly don't want to say it was easy. It was not. But once they realized, you know, that we were certainly well-intended and really wanted to tell a fun and exciting story, you know, they came on board, and we've had a great relationship with, you know, not only President Carter, but the Carter Center ever since.
One of the – there's so many cool points in the film, but that one of his aides in the campaign and in the administration says to you that music gave him credibility during the campaign, and it also gave him money because he was going into places. And when he started, he says to you in the film, he started out with artists who were from Georgia, and like Greg Allman and the Allman Brothers, and then moved on beyond that, and then was able to go throughout the country in places where he would have gotten a very small crowd. Jimmy Buffett, for one, comes forward in Oregon and brings in, you know, tens of thousands of people to hear this guy from Georgia who's running for president of the United States. That's a fascinating idea. Mary?
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's one of the great, you know, sort of I guess you could say just great examples of the power that music has, right?
Yeah.
And that's something that, you know, lots of political candidates have either tried or successfully been able to utilize this idea over the years. And I think one of the things to me that was so interesting is, you know, I always sort of had thought about, you know, Bill Clinton as the first rock and roll president, because, you know, he really got involved with MTV's Rock the Vote back in the 90s. And, you know, that was a big part of his campaign. And he went on the Arsenio Hall show and played the saxophone,
right,
to kind of show off his music bona fides, you know. But I had no idea that Jimmy Carter had this music connection. And, you know, perhaps because I was a little bit young during the 76 campaign. But, you know, it was kind of like this interesting thing that was just sort of like it was all there for us to find when we started looking for it. But either people had forgotten about it or never knew in the first place. And you know, I think that what's interesting about the Jimmy Carter thing is that you can tell by the way that all the artists speak about him, but also how sort of genuine the connection is. Mm. When you look at some of those pieces of footage, there's a shot of Carter coming on stage with Willie Nelson, and they shake hands, and the way they look at each other is pretty remarkable. And it's something that I always think about in terms of, like, if there was one visual image in the movie that kind of conveys the deep appreciation that Carter has for music and that musicians have for Carter, it's kind of that one shot where you see the look in their eyes when they look at each other and shake hands. And it's beautiful. And I think that, you know, it's just a great illustration of how Carter was able to use music in a very organic way, where the artist didn't feel like they were just you know, pawns in his game. And you know, and the audiences must have responded to it in a more organic way, too, because, you know, you can sense when things are just, you know, sort of a some kind of
Put up a gimmick. Well, and Dylan makes that point, Chris, right? I mean, when Dylan, when you talk to him, he says that it wasn't just an appreciation, it was a deep appreciation, a sincere appreciation for the music, and it was something that he says allowed him to realize that Carter was a kindred spirit.
Yeah, and I think that you can see that with the individuals. I mean, they certainly would have felt that. I mean, as Dylan said, that, you know, Carter quoted back Dylan's lyrics to him. So that must have been, you know, as he said, that felt wonderful. But even beyond that, just as musicians, I think people realized just that the depth of his knowledge. Again, it wasn't like, oh, Mr. President, you're going to be meeting Bob Dylan, or Mr. Governor at the time, you're going to be meeting Bob Dylan. This is his latest album. You know, this is a really good song. Here's what you should say to him.
Right.
He knew the music. And again, that wasn't just those three relationships that those gentlemen, Peter Conlon and Tom Beard, told me on that first day. I mean, as Mary and I did more and more and more research and talked to more people from the, you know, that time period, I mean, again, jazz, look at jazz, look at gospel, look at classical, I mean, country, I mean, just hit the depth and the breadth of his knowledge. You know, again, those musicians felt that, and they understood that he really did have an appreciation for it.
As you go through the story and his time as president, and how he is able to work this into, I mean, obviously he gets elected president. Do you have a sense of that he was bringing a youth vote? That was the hope of people in 1980 of what happened, of where things started to go off the rails.
Well, I mean, it's, you know, very, very different. 76 and 80 are obviously very different. 76, you're coming out of Watergate and Vietnam, and
right,
the country was sort of reeling. And, you know, the guys that ran his campaign, the architects of his campaign, Jody Powell and Hamilton Jordan, you know, were young themselves. I mean, everybody in and around the Carter machine they were all young people, and on some level inexperienced, which probably made it okay, you know, probably made their strategy work. They, you know, they thought of something that no one else had ever thought of in terms of using these musicians to help raise, you know, raise financing and get credibility. I mean, 80, again, we, you know, that wasn't the purpose of our film. We do allude to it. We do talk about some of the, you know, the broader issues that were going on, whether it was the obvious hostage crisis, whether it was hyperinflation, whether it was an energy crisis. You know, there are people who have spent a lot more time. There's a new book called Reaganland that just came out, which really goes through that sort of the campaign and the debates. But yes, it was a very, very different time. And he probably, as Jim Free says in the movie, wasn't best prepared for some of those, you know, some of those events, given his character and just what a good man he was, and that he was trying to make the right choice for the country, as opposed to political choices.
Well, the film is just a lot of fun and very, very enjoyable, and I learned a lot about it. The whole thing in there about how, because I even forgot about this, but Jerry Brown then comes into the race, and then there's sort of these dueling musicians with the Eagles and Linda Ronstadt and all of that, and it's really fascinating stuff. You can see the film up this coming Labor Day weekend, Thursday and Saturday at the Berkshire Drive-In at Shakespeare & Company campus, and on Sunday at the Mahawi Drive-In at Simon's Rock, and you can find out more information by going to the BIFMA website, which is Berkshire International Film Festival, BIFFMA.org, and that has the whole list there. Mary Wharton is the director. Chris Farrell produced the film. The name of it is Jimmy Carter, Rock and Roll President. Mary and Chris, I thank you very much for being with us. A great pleasure, and congratulations on the beautiful work.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.